Well, if it isn't the fox. Welcome to the hen house.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 19, The Bobby Trap. I see what they did there. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and the Fug Girls, Jessica Morgan and Heather Cox.
Welcome to Again With This. As you heard, Sarah is not with us this week. She is out spending time with her family. She has had a bereavement. Send her good thoughts. In her place, we have the Fug Girls themselves from GoFugYourself.com, Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan. Hello.
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 One important question before we start. Are you guys familiar with this TV show? And do you like this type of programming?
This was my first time. It was by some guy named Aaron Spelling. I don't know his over at all.
We'll get into your Melrose credentials in just a second. But we also wanted to announce there's a change on Again With This this week since Sarah is out. We will get to the SVU episode Blood with Christina Lise very, very soon. But this week, instead of that, it's going to be Dave and me talking about No Time to Die. Not the James Bond movie, season 10, episode 5 of Columbo, starring Thomas Calabro and Doug Savant, both. I have seen this episode called season 11, episode 2, but on Peacock, it's 10-5. We will link it there on the show notes. And because Sarah was out, Dave very ably sat in on Again With Them, our October digest of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 90210 OMG. To give you a peek behind the curtain, we actually have not taped that one yet. I'm extremely excited for Dave to experience firsthand what we go through bringing that thing to you as a perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. Dave is already upset.
I will just say, as a tease, it was a revelation.
So to get all that, join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. Now back to Heather and Jessica. Our listeners already know you are familiar with this because when we talked about the Kimberly Rips Off Her Wig episode, we linked to the Extra Hot Great, our sister podcast, where you both presented this to the canon. It was sailed through on votes, as I recall. How do you feel about season 4 where we are now? Jessica, what are your thoughts on this season?
So I haven't watched Melrose in a while. Mm-hmm. I think probably the last time I watched it maybe was when we did the Extra Hot Great. Although obviously I watched it as it aired. And then a million years ago, I recapped the wig episode for
yes.
Top. It's kind of amazing how you like snap right back into the show. Mm-hmm. Where I was like, wow, I don't remember a number of like really important things for my own personal life, but I turn this on. I'm like, oh yeah, when Amanda was dating Bobby Parisi, I totally remember this. Like, you remember everything.
Yeah.
Right. Brooke is about to spoiler. Mm-hmm. You know, things are going to happen to Brooke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun to get right back to it. As I said to Heather yesterday, we were talking, and I was like, oh, God, this show is a hoot.
It's really a hoot. I wanted to come to it because I thought it would be more fun. Someone who watched it as it aired and hadn't seen it in a while to not study up for this. Like I was like, I'm going to go in and watch this episode cold. Mm-hmm. But after I did, I was like, I got to go back. Like in my brain, Brooke was on the show like in like season 8 or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
I went through and I like read the Wikipedia summary of the season just to like make sure I knew what I'd missed. Mm-hmm. And the summary for season 4 just goes on and on. No wonder I thought it was season 8. And the body count overall for the whole season seems enormously high.
Yeah.
And in a way that you're like, God, they did it every week. And it makes it seem even more egregious what some of the like D stories are when you're like, there's people falling out of buildings or whatever. Yeah. And you're just like, and then so-and-so makes out with a woman. And doesn't seem the same.
Yeah.
I mean,
I understand why you thought that felt that these events happened so much later in the series because the seasons are so long. Like we are we passed the 100 episode mark like early in this season. So they crammed it in. But yeah, it's true. Anything can happen in season 4. And I love it because I don't remember this season at all so much. Yeah, there are episodes where like someone is on trial for murder. And it's not the A plot of the episode.
And every time I write, I was like, oh, this must be the season finale. And then I'm like, no,
nope.
It's still going. And it's, you know, it's old because it's like from the era when the networks would order more episodes of their shows as a boon. And like these days, more episodes of network TV is not helpful to them because the ratings are all generally so bad. But yeah, I don't know how they, you just don't know how they churned out this much TV. And of course, no wonder. I don't know if Melrose was a dramatic set, but obviously 90210 was. Mm-hmm. And no wonder, because like these people are around each other for 25 episodes a season. That's a long time without a break, and long hours. And like, no, I'm sure they all want to kill each other.
Well, and because it was so many, they were, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but when they did their Stars in the House reunion last year, they talked about how they would often be shooting two episodes at the same time that not like not in sequence. So they would get to the set and be like, okay, what just happened? Like, what am I reacting to? So the fact that they were able to keep any consistency with their characters is really a marvel. So let's get into the Bobby Trap.
Yes.
Starting with our D plot, Matt's got those dating a closeted actor blues. Oh,
Matt. I feel like when Matt dies, his headstone should read Matt the D plot, whatever his last name was, because that's his fate on the show.
That's where he is, unless there is an E plot, in which case that's the Matt plot. But anyway, hot set, at least it is, when Matt shows up looking for Alan. Heyo. He has arrived just in time for Alan to do a romantic scene opposite a lady on this soap that he's working on now. And Matt feels awkward about it immediately. Doesn't feel better once Alan gives his co-star a really tongue-intensive kiss. You can see in the visual aids. They both really go for it. And afterward, a producer is very inappropriate about what she just saw in clip two.
You are a natural lady killer. You're lucky I'm so damn old, or I would drag you to my office and do you in a second.
Listen, Gloria, I'd like you to meet my friend, Matt. He's here to see the taping.
Oh, that's nice. Do me a favor, Matt, and stand right back over there out of the way. There are a lot of people trying to do their work here, not just your friend. All right, come on, guys. The actors have to act. We have to talk numbers, okay?
That's our producer. She's something else, huh?
Yeah, she is. And hostile, too. Friend?
Oh, come on.
Do you know your game?
But this isn't issue central here, Matt. This is work.
You're right. And I don't play games, Alan. You understand?
Rehearsal, Wesley and Veronica, let's go.
Look, that's me. Watch my scene, okay? And tell me what you think.
I just did. I think it stinks.
Ooh. So this is an issue central. In other words, this is not Melrose Place season one. But I feel something we're going to keep talking about is like, this is shitty, but I also think Matt is being kind of unfair. It's like, it's the early 90s. Like,
100%.
You can't just be out at work or mid-90s.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. And also, like, the fact that he has that conversation with him at work on a hot, like, if he thinks this guy's in the closet, who knows whose mics are hot? Like, it's just one of those where you're like, this, it's so written for TV, for convenience. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I do want to point out that that clip is almost, is pretty much the entire scene and everything Matt says, which, and it comes 20 minutes into the episode. So when he showed up, I was like, oh my God, I forgot about Matt. And like, that's the D plot.
I know. It's like, also Matt, you're at your boyfriend's place of work. Like, yell at him in the car later, but like, be cool. You're going to, he's an actor. Like, don't get him fired.
Yeah.
You guys can discuss this later. Why are you being so like all over the place right now?
Especially because this is stuff Matt has clearly dealt with before in his own life. And also, if we're treating him like a real person, he's dealt with this in his real life. And also, like, it's like, even in the 90s, in fact, more in the 90s, everybody was aware that there were people who were working in Hollywood who weren't comfortable coming out. So, and he lives in LA. Yes. Like, was he under a rock?
Right.
I guess he was under a rock for 19 minutes until his big entrance onto the soap opera set.
But yeah, I mean, there are people that don't come out now. And it's, you know,
exactly.
25 years later. So give it a rest, dude.
It
anyway.
Just is the most ham-handed. And like, they just never seem to write this character with any particular care at all. Right. Like, he just was a jerk.
I also thought the producer was extremely ham-handed. Like, as someone who lived in Los Angeles in this time period, there are a lot of actors you knew were gay, and it wasn't like a thing. Like, she was very uncool and unrealistic and ham-handed. Like,
It
was
and
a lot.
The actor was also really unrealistic. If you're a closeted guy and you're on your set and you're bringing your friend to work, don't you have like better excuses than he's my friend.
Right.
Like,
right.
Wouldn't you be like, oh yeah, it's my like cousin's nephew, or I don't know. Like, you'd have a line that right. isn't just, he's my, like the ellipsis wouldn't be there.
Yes, absolutely. Well, there's a tiny bit more of Matt in this episode at the hospital later. David Erickson, Matt's replacement in social services, introduces himself in clip 3.
Look, I was wondering if I could ask you a favor.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. You know, also, I wanted to tell you a lot of us are very grateful for the way that you handled homophobic old geezer Dr. Hobbs. Makes it a little easier to breathe around here.
Are you saying
you're completely gay? Completely open, completely proud of it. A happy coincidence I got your old job, huh? Anyway, it was a courageous thing you did.
Oh, thanks. It was no big deal. What can I do for you now?
Well, I've got some bureaucratic hurdles that I need a little advice on. I was thinking maybe we could meet after work, get a drink, go over it.
Yeah, we could do that. I'm busy tonight. I'm seeing someone.
I'm not coming on to you, Matt. Although my mother would love it if I brought home a doctor.
Okay. I love that the contrast here is like, I'm completely gay. Like, he's in different circumstances. Also, who would ever put it that way?
Right. Completely gay. Like, I don't know.
Anyway, this is Complication Man. So now we have met him.
Yeah. And he's as like imaginatively cast as you would imagine. They never really try that hard, I feel like, to cast mm-hmm. Matt's love interests. They're always really kind of smarmy, underwhelming gentlemen.
Yes, it's true.
Matt needs a hot piece. That's the problem with the show.
Hard agree. Anything else to add before we move on?
Poor Matt. I mean, I was thinking while I was watching this that like in the 90s when this was new, I remember having some of my gay friends were like, oh my God, Matt's only subplot is that he's gay.
Yes.
And at the time I was like, that's true. And now watching it again with the, you know, 25 years later, I'm like, wow, this is really true. It is unfortunate. Like, can't this man also maybe have accidentally murdered someone? Maybe he did and I don't remember, but like,
he did.
Give him something else.
Oh,
he
did.
No, he was, okay, he had a boyfriend who framed him. He had a boyfriend who was married to a woman and he killed her. And then framed me.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's what I'm saying. Like, mm-hmm. Melrose Place has a vast pot of terrible things to happen to a person that have nothing to do with their sexuality. So, like, poor Matt could have gotten other stuff to do.
It's true. Someday. All right, let's go on to our C-plot. Billy is finally all full up on Brooke's shit. Brooke and her depressed majorette suit, which you can see in the visual, it's like has piping. It's double breasted, but it's like very dark. She pauses walking into D&D to indicate something with a hand on her stomach, not clear what, and then stops at Billy's desk to talk to him, but he's on a deadline. She wants to start again, marriage-wise, clip 4.
If I ever meant anything to you.
You never did. All right. I'm sorry for that remark, but I can't deal with you right now. Besides, we have said everything there is to say, and I'd just appreciate it if you'd leave me alone.
You can hear the smile in his voice as he's, like, trying to back off, saying that she never meant anything to him. Like, this is a problem we've been talking about a lot. He's not doing the right faces in this plot line because he's not a good actor, Andrew
Shue. No, I don't think he understands face versus inflection versus mm-hmm. anything, which is sort of funny once you realize that Billy is awful and you're like, okay, he's the villain of the piece. No matter what he's saying or doing or anyone is saying around him, Billy is the villain.
Yes.
And then you're, but you're like, does Andrew Shue know that?
Right.
No. Unclear.
He does not. Bless his heart.
Don't know.
He's so cute. So he does have that.
It's also very sweet to see Kristen Davis sort of learning on, like soap opera 101 is if you're walking around somewhere and your hand is over your belly, you're probably think you're pregnant.
Right.
That is, as far as I know, in this episode anyway, not the storyline. So like,
that
you
already
gotta
happened.
Be careful.
Yeah.
When you deploy the hand, you have to be very careful what you're doing.
You're so
it's
right.
A plot signifier that it means something to soap opera fans, Kristen.
It does.
They should have someone on set being like, listen, I'm the gesture police. You can't use that one.
So for some reason, Allison sees Brooke's fallen face and tries to help. And for some reason, Brooke pulls Allison into the office that Brooke has somehow started using again and whines at Allison to make Billy talk to Brooke. Allison doesn't want to get into the middle of this suddenly, apparently forgetting the way to achieve that would have been not to inquire after Brooke's feelings in the first place. But Brooke has just claimed stepdaughter privilege when Amanda busts in and yells at them both to get their shit together. This is a runner in the episode. Amanda's in a later plot line, but she keeps being like, quit, bring your personal shit to the office. And then something personal will immediately happen to her, which, because of the format of this podcast, we couldn't really highlight except for me to say it right there. Anyway, that night, Allison goes to Jake's place where Billy has been crashing to ask him to go to counseling with Brooke. Inappropriate. Billy refuses, reminding Allison how Brooke fucked with Allison's place like yesterday in the show's timeline. He needs to see Brooke as the frightened little girl she is, Allison thinks. But he's sick of taking Brooke's emotional beatings. Besides which, why is Allison trying to get them to reconcile when just days ago Allison was trying to get herself back together with Billy? Good point. He even tries to put a hand on her shoulder like he's trying to get something going sexually, but she shakes him off and huffs out. And the next day, Amanda lets everyone in the staff meeting know that Brooke is missing deadlines already. And then Brooke and Billy proceed to make it weird for everyone. Clip 5.
Yes, I'll have that ready in a couple of days. Maybe if Billy could help me with a copy.
I'm very busy.
No. You just hate me, that's all.
We're going to therapy tonight. We don't have to start here.
Please, can we stop this?
I'll assist, Brooke.
A note of maturity. Thank you.
Let me ask you both. If you're one of the other employees at D&D, do you love these outbursts or hate them? Are you excited for them to fight in front of you, or is it annoying?
100% love it, I think. Maybe yeah. If I'm really struggling to get my work done. But like, honestly, that's the kind of workplace gossip you want. It's nowhere near me unless I'm witnessing it. But like, I'm not going to get burned by it.
It's literally the only good thing about going into an office is awesome gossip.
Particularly
and awesome drama.
This office where a guy hung himself over his desk one time. Like, that's not the happiest memory. So you really need to be like, oh, I am getting the popcorn and I'm watching Brooke and Billy like fall to shit.
Yep.
Great. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a messy bitch who loves drama, so I would love this. And I was, while I was watching this scene, I was thinking about, so I just rewatched all of Mad Men, and I was kind of like thinking about Amanda Woodward and Don Draper as like two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
And I think they both kind of had the same reaction. Don would have had this reaction that Amanda has, which is basically like, oh my God, shut the fuck up, do your job, you guys are idiots. Yes. I was just like, I just love this. Like, I love being reunited with these people. It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's also amazing to listen to even without the visuals of Andrew Hsu's dialogue, because in this scene with Allison, when she's going on, she's like, you're the most compassionate man I've ever known. Ugh. And like, you taught me how to reach past your, she said, you taught me how to reach past your hurt and touch another human being. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it down because I was like, really? Did he really do that? Like, I know it's been a while since I've watched the show, but like, there's literally nothing about the way he delivers any line at all that makes you think there's a person under there. Mm-hmm. With feelings, he just is like, yeah, okay, no, I hate you. Get out of my place. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It's the best.
It is.
Kind of missed him.
So Brooke is trying to pump Allison for information about where Billy might be when a guy delivers an envelope to her. We've all seen a soap opera before, so we know what it is. But Brooke, I guess, has not, because she guesses someone found some of her dad's money squirreled away somewhere, at which Allison winces at Brooke's obliviousness, given that she was, you know, Brooke's dad's widow, but Brooke is oblivious to that as well. But because we've all seen TV before, as I said, obviously they are divorce papers, and her face crumbles. And she takes her shiny brown suit straight to the courtyard, yelling for Billy, just in time to see him put two suitcases full of her shit outside the door. Clip 6.
Look at me. I'm your wife. I love you. Don't do this.
It's done, Brooke. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Where am I supposed to go?
Stay with some of your rich friends. I really don't know.
No! I will not let you do this. You made a vow. You said you loved me.
I'm sorry. I really am.
He's not sorry.
It's like trying to act opposite a pole. I feel so sorry for her. She's throwing everything she can at him. Like, he makes Grant Show look like an Oscar-winning thespian. It's remarkable.
Yeah. The worst part is that, as we heard in the clip before this, he had agreed to go to therapy, and if they even went the one time. Like, he's just made this flip of being like, no, I'm not going to work on it anymore after all. And surprise, this is how I'm telling you, by packing your stuff.
Yeah, Billy sucks is like the short version of it. Like he's the worst.
I'm glad we're all in agreement because, All right. On to the B plot. Make room for another friggin' Parisi. Amanda and Bobby are in bed at his place on their way to doing sex. Lying down is even better staging for a love scene starring the two of them than with her standing, him sitting, which is what they've been doing lately. But then the phone rings. Clip 7.
Good news, Alicia.
This is your father, son, and I'm a little upset with you. Things haven't gone exactly the way I planned. Now, I'd like you to come down to Miami for a talk.
Look, there's not a lot for us to talk about.
You look, son. If Amanda Woodward's still alive, there's a hell of a lot for us to talk about. You haven't taken care of her now, have you?
I told you I couldn't do that.
You can and you will. Or else.
Look, I can't get into this now.
Now, Mr. Parisi, it's time to get back to business. Bobby?
So I kind of thought the show forgot about this plot line, like that he was supposed to kill her, because they haven't talked about it in many episodes at this point.
Well, you know, what can you say? They got to get in all those awkward sex scenes first, cram them in. I don't even know what to say. This is the one where Antonio Sabato played his brother,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay. How was he on the show? I don't remember. I remember because I knew him from General Hospital. So I was like, yay, it's Jagger. But I didn't remember if he was any good because like Bobby, no.
He's not great. People in their comments are like, they hate Bobby, I think, more than Sarah or I do.
Yeah. He's not the best.
He's not the best. He's not the worst either. I mean, there have definitely been worse, Chaz. But anyway. When Bobby gets up, Amanda obviously wants to know who was on the phone, but he's evasive and she lets him know she's not cool with him keeping secrets, but he still doesn't tell her who it was. So then Amanda's just finished snapping at Brooke and Allison for using work time to deal with their personal shit when she has to take a personal call from Bobby. Clip 8.
Well, Bobby, down on your knees?
I don't do that for anyone, sweetheart.
I bet Peter did. Just saying. Bobby does apologize and they make plans to meet the next night. And after he's hung up, Alicia storms into Bobby's office with bad updates on everything, basically. He is expected to give some politician a $100,000 donation to Greece through some approvals or whatever. But Bobby insists on doing everything by the book. And then Peter comes in. He and his doctor buddies are looking for a new investment opportunity, but Bobby doesn't do business with people he doesn't trust. And Peter accepts that for now and smoothly gives his card to Alicia. Bobby orders her to throw it out and not return Peter's calls, which, like, she's a lawyer, not your assistant, but of course she keeps the card. And once again, Amanda's just finished scolding everyone for bringing their personal drama to the office right before Bobby enters to call her away. Apparently, the emergency he had to interrupt her meeting for was inviting her to go away with him for the weekend immediately. And she's like, I have work. And when Allison offers to cover for her, Amanda tells her to mind her own business. Poor Allison cannot win in this episode. But Bobby tells Amanda it's very important and he loves her. And she relents and puts Allison in charge while she's gone. Nothing comes of that, so forget it. And on their getaway, Amanda sort of skips stones. I think we're supposed to think that's what happened, but she fully just like throws a stone in the ocean.
And then like skips away squealing, like, this is so fun. And you're like, what, hurling? I mean, I guess if you're three, never hurled a rock in the ocean before.
She had a very cute sweater on in that scene. You know the 90s are really back when I'm looking at this and being like, where can I get like a cropped chenille cardigan
pink
again?
Chenille.
That's working.
So then she complains that Bobby's barely spoken since they left town. He claims to feel bad for taking Amanda away from a man she loved, meaning Peter, but she assures him that she feels great about everything and tells him to lighten up. And then he starts edging toward what the problem actually is. Clip 9.
My family's done great harm to you. I'm always going to be a part of that.
Don't do this. What happened, happened to me, understand? You had nothing to do with it, and if I thought for a second that you did, I wouldn't be here.
I know. Nothing bad will ever happen to you again.
Because I won't let it. I don't want you to feel guilty. I don't want you to protect me. I want you to be happy and love me. Think you can do that?
Yeah, I guess I can.
It's all I want.
That's all I want.
I don't get what he thinks his end game is. Like, unless you're planning to kill your dad, like, this is going to continue to be a problem.
Yeah, like, it's not a very well thought out. It's such a bridge episode where you're just like, we're just going to stuff it with as much as possible so that we can get to the last scene.
Yeah.
Where, like, none of that internal logic makes any sense at all. Unless he thinks they could just, like, run off to Mexico and stay there and not get found. But, like, has he never watched TV? Because that, you always get found.
Well, and when he came to town, the first thing she said to him was, you're here to kill me. And he's like, I won't do that. So it's not like she doesn't know this is what the plan is. So I don't know why he would just tell her.
I'm supposed to kill you, but I don't want to.
Right.
Amanda Woodward is not a dumb person. So I feel like she could help him figure out how to get out of having to kill her. She runs D&D advertising. Let us not forget that Amanda is like a boss bitch. So I feel like she could have given him some logistical assistance had he told her what was going on.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's just a very tough storyline because he is such a, again, a tree of a person. He just isn't giving her much. Like, I love you. I just feel bad. I hurt your family. And she's friggin' Heather Locklear, so she can deliver anything you want whenever you want. She's so good that, like, it's just really work to believe that she would even go to this effort for this person who, like, Neanderthals his way into her office and tells her they're leaving and, like, you're coming with me. And, like, and they give her the right responses, which is to be like, knock it off. Who do you think you are? But then she goes along with it anyway. And it's just like, you don't get that he's worth the trouble.
Yeah.
Like, she wouldn't stand for this. It doesn't add up at all. And I don't know if it's just, again, a casting issue. Like, if a better actor would have made you think, oh, but yeah, because, like, obviously you're not going to walk away from that. I don't know.
Right. I mean, I think some of the earlier episodes did more to establish, like, it was their lost, like, forbidden love. And that's what she's more remembering versus what anything that's happening now. But anyway.
Yeah.
Back to the episode. After having lunch together, Peter tries to charm Alicia into telling him how Bobby's business works, but she holds the line, reminding Peter that Bobby doesn't want anything to do with Peter or his money. So Peter changes gears. Maybe he's interested in Alicia. She finds it hard to believe he would go to this much trouble just to get a date with her. And he thinks there are lots of ways they can benefit each other. And she slinks away without kissing him. She called him this time, but next time he has to call her, blah, blah. So then Bobby and Amanda are at dinner. By the way, 100% at the Bellage. That's definitely where they are. But they're about to kiss when a waiter interrupts with a message for Bobby that he doesn't want to tell her about, and he leaves to deal with it, asking her to wait at the table, and she gets pissed that he won't tell her what is happening. And after a few seconds alone, she decides waiting is for suckers, and she takes off, and we watch her walk through the entire restaurant to the, like, maitre, the host stand or whatever, like this is fucking Columbo or something, but a concierge saw Bobby meet a gentleman and go with him to Bobby's room. And so that's where Amanda goes. And when she enters, there's one hired goon with a ponytail who's blonde. Where are they hiring their goons from? A blonde? Come on. But he grabs her and pulls a gun on her. And then Bobby's dad comes out of the bathroom or whatever, followed by Bobby, whom a second gun is also holding at gunpoint. And we hear this, clip 10.
Well, look who's here. My younger son's killer. Come right in. Sit down, young lady.
Bobby, I thought this was over.
It will be soon. Have a little patience, miss.
Sorry, Amanda.
Don't talk, son. Listen.
Not gonna let you do this.
I said listen. Now, you refused to do what I asked about this girl. First one excuse and then another. And now you're sleeping with her? You're having sex with the woman that murdered your brother? Does that seem right to you? Oh, I understand. You think you love her so much that you would betray me. But I know that you want to make it right. So you're going to choose, Bobby. You're going to choose who's going to live. Because one of you has got to die. Now, which one is it going to be, Bobby? Is it going to be you? Or is it going to be the woman that murdered your brother?
Da Dun, dun, dun. David Groh plays Vincent. We've already said this on a previous episode. And talk about fucking going for it. Like, playing to the fifth balcony with this performance.
Oh, my God. That one line was so Costanza that, like, get the magic product. Like, if I close my eyes, it's George Costanza saying that in a diner. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's true.
This is not the best plan, though. Like, it's...
No.
Are you really going to murder one of them in the Bellage Hotel? Like, mm-hmm. wouldn't you drag them out to a field?
Yeah,
it's going to make it really hard to get the body hidden.
Like, I also recently watched all of The Sopranos, so I also thought, this does not seem like a good murder plan.
No.
You guys have not thought through your murder logistics here.
However,
I will say, this is one of the reasons the show is entertaining, though, because this is the episode out, and I did think to myself, holy shit, how's Amanda Woodward going to get out of this one? It does make you think like, oh my God, I need to see what how this happened. Like, you know they're not really going to kill Heather Locklear, but like, how is she going to finagle her way out of this?
No, this is pure February sweeps. Like, this is when it aired, and you can tell.
And the writing of that scene is so like, the plot is super dependent on Amanda Woodward doing the Amanda Woodward thing, which is, I'm absolutely not going to sit around and wait at this table for you.
Yep.
But a different show would have just had her sit there for a couple hours and then pay the check and leave and then go upstairs. And they've just been in the bathroom hiding for like 2 hours waiting for her to come upstairs. And they're like, finally, she's here. Like, it's just perfect. It's like one of those where you're like, Melrose Place, just it doesn't stand up to that much scrutiny in the construction of the episodes in a way that is so delightful. And it shouldn't, you know, it's like, it's not what you watch it for.
No, it's true. And for the 15th time, someone tell Vincent, Jack died in an accident. He fell. She did not kill him. Drop it.
Amazing. He didn't even use her name. This is the woman who murdered your brother. The woman who murdered your brother.
Yeah.
Your brother's killer.
She was your daughter-in-law, bro.
It's an amazing, amazing story. Like it is one of those where even in a not good plot line and a not good episode, you're like, oh, this is why Heather Locklear was the shining star of the Aaron Spelling shows, is because I've said it already today, like, she can do anything you want and she makes it watchable.
Finally, our A plot. Everything's coming up, Jane. We open at Jane's place. Jake is asleep on the couch, which pulls out, but which he has not pulled out because Lone Wolf Hansen doesn't need to stretch his legs. When Jane comes hopping out of her bedroom to her wheelchair, and he yells at her for not getting him to help, but she's going to put in the effort to regain her mobility now. She thanks him for staying and for saving her life in that order, and he offers refreshment. She accepts orange juice, of which there is a whole giant pitcher of fresh squeezed in the fridge, even though she has not been living there for at least 1 week. So who made this juice? But anyway, she has decided not to blame Sydney for what happened. She was sick of looking after Jane, which no one should have to do. And this is all just singing Lone Wolf Hansen's self-sufficient song. But even he doesn't think that she should let Sydney off the hook. And then Allison pops by to say hi because she heard, that Jane was back. This all happened last night. Jake has just finished shitting on Sydney when Sydney herself knocks on the door with flowers. And Jane makes Jake let her in. The flowers are by way of apology, which Jane accepts before Allison is like, wait, what happened? Like, it has not been spelled out that Sydney left her on the beach to drown. Sydney insists that Jane's near drowning was an accident. She and Jake briefly snipe at each other before Jane tells them to quit it, and Allison ushers Sydney out. And with no one else left, Jane has to glare at Jake, because that's all. That's her only option. It's that or the fridge. Sydney then goes to Kimberly's office to recap the situation so far, leave it to the professionals, and bitch some more about having to face the consequences of her actions, which is, of course, not how she puts it. Now her weird styling has evolved to, she looks like a Hitchcock heroine in a red wig. It's like a long circle skirt, like Grace Kelly styly. Kimberly tries to get Sydney to acknowledge her hostility toward Jane. Sydney denies that she is hostile, so Kimberly quotes her from their last session saying she'd have been better off if Jane had died. And Sydney is sure Kimberly's going to dime out Sydney after cooking up this whole scheme and stomps out. And Kimberly runs after her, promising she's trying to help. But Sydney continues stomping, which is when Michael appears. Clip 11.
What was that drama all about?
Well, I'm sure it's no news to you, but that girl has some serious issues to work out.
Coming from Kimberly, that is rich.
seriously, physician heal myself.
I had forgotten what her arc was. And so when she first showed up and I realized she was a shrink, I literally wrote down, Kimberly's a shrink?
That's a bad idea.
What?
Exactly. So then she asks Michael for coffee. Like the rest of us, he is confused about her being nice to him all of a sudden. And she says this, clip 12.
I don't know, Michael. Even when I've hated you, I still think you're kind of cute.
Same. Sorry.
True. Fair.
This is why his character works.
That's right.
He would like to return the compliment, but says she looks exhausted and offers to give her a B12 shot. Keep that in mind. The next that night, Joe comes by to see Jane, who is doing much better. Joe ends up awkwardly sitting in the wheelchair before explaining that she's there because Richard, who does not know Joe is there, has a huge meeting coming up with a big distributor whose name is John Marshall. This guy's expecting Jane to be there, and if she isn't, there's no deal. Clip 13.
Jane, Richard needs your help, or his line is going to sit on the rack. I mean, look, he did help you by pulling you into his company in the first place.
The way I look at it, I helped him by bringing in a hell of a lot of good ideas.
Yeah, of course.
And you two worked very hard to get me out of the company. And you won. So, what can I say? Payback's a bitch.
Yes, it is.
Now we're into your area of expertise. So were you disappointed that we didn't get to see any of Jane Mancini's designs in this episode?
Desperately upset. I do enjoy that in the scene later when there's stuff going on. I think John O'Hurley says, I may have jumping the gun a little. Yes. He says something to Joe like, nice photography, but everything around them appears to be a sketch. Right. I was like, that doesn't make sense. But like no clothes, none of her designs at all. She only says the word designs once.
Yeah.
I was waiting for it.
Yes, I think we're all very concerned that Richard's line gets to see the light of day. Just kidding, no one cares. Then it's time for the meeting. Richard is telling Joe he still needs to come up with a story for why Jane isn't there. Awesomely, as Heather said, John Marshall is John O'Hurley, feeling himself as always, and he's being trailed for the day by some fashion reporter. Says, could be a big day for them both, assuming John likes the work, and there's a long, awkward pause after this. Before he says he's just kidding. He always likes Jane's designs. Where is she, by the way? And Richard swallows hard and stalls long enough for Jane to show up in her wheelchair, bravely waving off John's concern and taking over the meeting while Richard looks on, deflated. And over breakfast, Sydney bitches that the old Kimberly is back. Her audience is Michael, except not really, and that he is not listening. And when she gets to her fear that Kimberly's going to tell people Sydney was responsible for Jane's troubles, Michael is like, you were, you left her on the beach. But of course, we know that's not what she meant. And she meant that, you know, she drugged her in the first place. She is lucky Michael's distracted. She thinks Michael should move back in with her so they can watch each other's backs. Clip 14.
What in God's name are you eating?
Bagel. Bimbo. Mash.
That's revolting. You're the one who's dangerous around here.
It's just a total non sequitur of a moment, but like, why? Why not?
I had to rewind that scene because I got caught up with, I was like, is that mayonnaise? And they even had him do the stage business of like picking up the mayonnaise and looking at it while they're talking. And I was totally enthralled by the truth of the bagel. And I had to rewind for the dialogue.
Well, the thing that made me kind of laugh was, so obviously I remember this because I recapped it, but in the episode where Kimberly rips off her wig, there is also this stage business where Sydney and Michael are having like a fight or something, but she's making tuna fish salad.
Yeah.
And she like goes storming out. And the end of the scene is he picks up the bowl of tuna fish. She goes, oh, tuna fish. And I was like, did they do this all the time that Sydney was making like a mayonnaise-based snack and then Michael reacts to it? Mm-hmm. Like, should we have been tracking this?
I believe we have a gif of that tuna because she seriously made it in like a punch bowl, this bowl of tuna.
It's a huge bowl of tuna. Yeah. And she's like sobbing. So and he's like, oh, tuna. It's just like, I've never forgotten this. It's been 25 years.
So good. Anyway, back to the meeting at the studio, which is going great for Jane. Clip 15.
Well, people, I think we have ourselves a deal. Jane, it's always nice to see your work.
Oh, thank you. Really, John, Richard was instrumental in the design.
I think it's great that you two support each other, but let's get real. I wouldn't trust Richard with a design board any more than I would trust you with a factory invoice. But that's why you two have such a good partnership. Joe, by the way, that was excellent photography. Come on, Arthur.
Well, he's right, you know, we had a good partnership. Maybe it's time to put the bad blood behind us and, you come back home. I know that Joe had something to do with you being here today, so why don't the three of us just get together again and put the rag trade on its ear?
Things aren't really the same here. Maybe you and Joe should talk first.
Yeah, Jane has a point, Richard. But it would be nice to work together again. Be friends again, too.
I'd like that.
I think we all would.
I think Richard is the youngest person ever to use the phrase, the rag trade.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Let's turn it on its ear.
Yeah.
I love listening to these clips divorced from the audio because you're, divorced from the video, because if you don't know, like, you're like, oh, John O'Hurley's character, he brought his dog to the meeting, right? He's like, come on, Arthur. Like, that, it's such a weird, like.
Yeah.
It's too weird. Anyway,
because nothing comes of the reporter being there either. Like, I don't know why they added that part. But anyway.
Because he's important in the fashion industry, don't you know?
Sure.
I also enjoy the, you know, don't trust the little lady with the fashion invoice.
Yeah.
I know, right?
I mean,
math is hard.
She did bankrupt her own company. So, I mean,
fair. True. Well, that's good point.
Fair point. Yeah.
I want like a date. I mean, I could just literally look this up, but I'm going to throw it out to the universe instead. Like, did this happen before or after the Seinfeld where it comes out that everyone on Seinfeld secretly watches Melrose Place and Jerry after. Has to take after? Okay. Yes. Good to know. So I was like, did they get the idea from Melrose? Thank you for giving me the answer to my question.
I don't remember if John O'Hurley was on Seinfeld at that point, though. I would have to look that up. But we did cover that episode of Seinfeld for the Patreon.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Yeah. It's a very good show.
It is. They are both very
Jay
good.
Makes him so mad.
Yep. And featuring Grant Cho's future wife as the cop.
Oh, wow.
Catherine Linaza.
Mm-hmm. Everything is like coming together. The universe is mysterious.
I forgot they're married. Yeah.
So then it's time for that good old B12 shot we heard about earlier. Kimberly would prefer not to get it in her arm, smacking her haunch instead. And he tells her to turn around so that he can fill the syringe with definitely not B12, and then approaches her garter-belted butt. And she immediately gets woozy, and he helps her onto the exam table, explaining that he actually shot her up with some kind of truth serum, because sure. And starts quizzing her about the drugs in Jane's wine. And Kimberly tries to resist, but then says Sydney did it out of jealousy. Kimberly doesn't have plans to hurt Michael. She loves him and ends up falling onto his chest while he celebrates hornily. And the next day, Sydney, in businesslike black and gold, storms in on Kimberly, demanding her patient records and declaring her intent to report Kimberly to the head of the hospital for breaking confidentiality for these free sessions, by the way. Kimberly has to explain how and why she told Michael the truth, which Sydney does not believe at first, until Kimberly reminds her that Michael is totally capable of it. Sidebar, why did this confrontation between Michael and Sydney happen off screen? Like, that's something we should have seen.
Like, did they run over? You could have literally, I guess they couldn't have, but you could have cut Matt's two scenes.
Yes!
In favor of an actual conversation between two good actors.
Or shorten the fucking rock skipping and the beach. Like, something.
Yes.
Yeah, they could have cut the whole
iconic
beach scene,
rock
honestly.
Skipping moment. Yeah, like, it just, very strange choices made. Like, you never want less Michael or less Sydney.
Yes!
No.
Absolutely. Anyway, Kimberly does feel responsible that Sydney no longer has a place to live and offers to let Sydney move in with her, which is awfully big of her since that was Sydney's apartment before Amanda kicked her out. Just once, Sydney would like to end up on top, she says. Bitch, top Kimberly! Just kidding. Kimberly would totally be the top in that relationship. Then, Michael finds Kimberly in the hall at the hospital to crow that Sydney's finally out of his house and his life, thanks to Kimberly. Now he has all the room in the world for the woman who truly loves him, but Kimberly says she was starting to have feelings for him again, but then he grossed her out, and there's no difference between what he did to Kimberly and what Sydney did to Jane. She would love to trust Michael again, but he killed it. Never again with him! Definitely again with him. That night, Jane goes for a swim because now all of her limbs work. She doubled PT for one day. That's all it took. Now she's fine. So
she's a super talent.
Yeah.
She's God.
Jake is happy to see her near drowning incident didn't scare her away from water. And he apologizes for having been so hard on Sydney in Jane's defense. But she likes being with someone who cares about people other than himself, which, like, we're with each other now. Okay. But then they kiss. She pulls him into the pool. And the next day, Richard is excited to see Jane walking herself into the studio with a cane. He is eager to start figuring out what pieces they're going to put into production or whatever. And then Joe appears, also celebrating Jane's return. And this ensues our final clip.
Richard and I are very happy you're back with the company.
Well, partners, let's get to work.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk to you about.
Ms. Mancini?
Yes, everything in there goes, including the desk files and supplies.
Wait a minute. What are you doing?
Look, you guys, I've had a change of heart. I realize now that relationships started in lies can't ever produce anything of value. And I'm sorry for my part in that, especially between us, Richard.
Jane, I appreciate you coming clean and all, but Marshall's gonna walk.
Well, you can use my name for that deal. But after that, you guys are on your own, and so am I. I just need to get back to the basics. Do my own work, you know? Succeed or fail on my own. Without manipulating anybody.
I have never heard such a patented bunch of crap in my entire life. What are you gonna do? Sew your little outfits in your living room?
If I have to, yes. And this is not about hurting the two of you.
Sure as hell feels like it.
Well, I understand you're both angry, but I really do wish you the best.
Excuse me. The feeling's not mutual. If you want your files, you better get a lawyer, because these are company property.
Fine. If that's the way you want to play it. I'll see you around.
Girl boss out. And that's it for the episode.
God. What is Joe even doing at this company?
I don't know.
Freelance magazine photographers are like, yeah, I'm a partner in a fashion company. What is she doing there?
I was thinking, and obviously this is one of those notes where, like, if they really did this, the show would not exist. But, like, both Joe and Jane would never live in Los Angeles. If you guys are both serious, you're living in New York. What are you doing? This is dumb. Also, Patrick Muldoon would probably be in New York. Also, we need to talk about his office and how ugly it is. I think in, like, 1994 or whenever this aired, that office was, like, the height of, like, this really cool, like, 90s chic. And you look at it now and you're like, why is this happening? This is, like, the ugliest thing I've ever seen. It has so many, like, plastic doodads in the background. It's so ugly. It just really made me laugh.
And, like, a really loud rug. Looks like a comic book rug or something. It looks like it should have the word, like, zowie or, like, bam, written in the middle of it.
Yeah, it looks like the Nickelodeon offices, basically.
Yeah, it's really
except
bad.
Cheap Nickelodeon offices.
Yes.
Yeah.
And his hair is all, like, he was so cute when he was on Days of Our Lives, and I don't know what they're doing with his hair, but you know how on The Simpsons, every time there's, like, a preppy character and their hair is sort of like this sort of flat brown lid.
Yeah.
That's what they've put on him. It looks like a lid. It's so, they're just, like, ruining the hot, which I guess, you know, for where his character's going, that's appropriate, but, like,
yes.
I think the main problem sort of with this plot line for me is that Jane is so boring to me.
Yeah.
Like, her haircut is amazing. She carries it beautifully. Other than that, I don't care. Like, Grant Show, I'm interested. He's so good looking. Obviously, the triangle of Sydney, Kimberly Shaw, Michael Mancini is golden. But like every time Jane gets involved, I'm just like, oh God, this is boring. You're so boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a storyline where, again, at the end there, unless I'm spacing on something, she tells him, like, I've realized that relationships built on lies don't have any value. And I was like, when did you realize that? Like, where was the scene where that occurred to you?
Right.
And if you, like, but at the same time, like, I'm willing to accept it because I'm like, I didn't want to see a scene with Jane learning anything. Like, cut that scene. Keep Sydney and Michael's scenes. Like, I'm okay with that omission because I can kind of be like, yeah, whatever. Jane slept on it and it's fine. I don't need her to talk to anyone. It's boring.
We talked about this on the Patreon. Sorry. There was a TV Guide cover story of Josie Bassett right before the season started, where she was, like, super excited about this heel turn that they were giving her because Darren Star left right before the season. They had a new showrunner. I mean, he was still involved, obviously, but he was not, like, on a day-to-day. And clearly, like, they tried it with this heel turn with her, and it just never worked. And so now we're back to, like, Jane's doing it for herself. She's a tough lady, and her reward is Jake. All right. Anyway, sorry, Jessica, what were you going to say?
My other question is, I can't remember how this went down. So you're going to need to explain this to me, but like, are we supposed to truly believe Dr. Kimberly Shaw is any kind of, like, mental health professional slash moral authority.
Right.
Do any of you remember anything Kimberly has ever done in her entire life? She is not a moral authority.
Wasn't the beginning of the season the aftermath of her blowing up the complex?
Yes. She blew up. So, a building.
18 episodes ago, she blew up Melrose Place, and now she's a shrink.
Yeah. her case is still pending as far as we know. Like, they vaguely will refer to, like, I got you out on probation, or you're on a work study, or like, she was living with Peter for a while. It's like, Peter's not a psychiatrist either. Like, none of it made sense.
The Wikipedia summary was like, she decided after all of that she wanted to learn psychiatry. And I was I guess that's like the literally the one line someone said in a writer's meeting, probably. That was like, I mean, maybe she wants to be a shrink.
Yeah.
But like in the real world, you'd be like,
Didn't she have someone handcuffed in the building when she blew up Melrose Place?
Yes.
So that's attempted murder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think Kimberly Shaw, who is, again, one of my favorite characters in all time, she should not be working at a hospital. Like,
she understands the issues, haven't lived inside of them her whole life.
I mean, she certainly should not be treating one of the people that she tried to kill. And that person should not be seeking treatment from her, no matter how inexpensive it is, which is also how they tried to, like, massage why she's treating Sydney.
Yeah. I mean, I get it, because when you have these three characters, obviously you need to have them in scenes together constantly. And how else are you going to do it unless Kimberly is at the hospital? Like, from a writerly perspective, I understand that they kind of didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
But like, from a viewer perspective, it's kind of mind-boggling. This woman is a murderer and a sociopath.
Yes. And she's still living it. Don't you think she could have, like, they could have, like, run into each other at the same, like, diner or Shooters or something, where it's like they end up and they're the only people there drinking and they just start talking?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to be, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, in fairness, if I were Jake, I would also ban her from Shooters because she's a dangerous person. But, you know.
Does anyone really want to go to Shooters is my question. So maybe they just need a coffee shop.
And by the way, there is a previous episode where she's like, I'm back living at the complex where she's at Shooters. And she's like, people aren't being very friendly to me. And Jake is like, well, I don't judge. It's like, she tried to kill you too. It's really preposterous. Like, you sometimes hear, like, interviews with the writers of, you know, Breaking Bad, where they were like, we would give ourselves a challenge of, like, what's the most impossible situation we could come up with and then try and write our way out. And the Melrose writers do that too, except they just don't try to write their way out. They're like, it's been 12 episodes. No one's going to remember what happened. And they're probably right.
Soap Dish is a movie that, if you watch it all the way through to the end, has a lot of problems that haven't aged well, but so much of the stuff along the way is brilliant. And the idea of the writers from sitting around and being like, he doesn't have a head. Well, it was sewn back on, or like whatever. Like, just sort of, it's funny because it kind of feels true.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically how you imagine the writers of Melrose Place solved all of their problems. It's like, well, Jake doesn't care. He's fine. He is not judgmental.
Right. All right, let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Jessica, who is your MVP for the episode?
This is a tough choice. I mean, I think I'm going to go with Michael Mancini just because I love him. I thought his stage business with the bagel was really funny. and I was just delighted to, like, have him back in my life.
Nice. Heather.
I mean, I feel like this answer is maybe too obvious for every episode, but I'm going to go. I was almost picked Sydney because she looks fantastic, even though her costumes were crazy. But I'm going to go with Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like Heather Locklear is probably at heart the MVP of every episode.
Yes.
But seriously, like, the things that she was saddled with and the person acting opposite her that was so bad and the fact that she made any of it watchable and delivered some, like, singers and eye rolls and clearly made her exasperation with everyone around her apparent.
Yeah.
It's classic Amanda Woodward. And the sweater, the chenille sweater. I gotta go with her.
She looked good.
Yeah,
she did.
I'm going to go with Michael as well. I mean, he's the only one that got to the truth of what happened with the drugging. You know, whether he's going to ever tell Jane, TBD. But he got out of it what he needed to get out of it, and that's the Michael that we know and love and hate. Least valuable player. This time I'm going to go to Heather first. Who is your least valuable player?
That noise may as well have come from me. there are a lot of, and I forgot that my honorable mention for MVP, by the way, is Matt's boyfriend and the actress, because that kiss was the most excruciating thing I've ever seen.
So bad.
I can't decide if they were directed to kiss that way or if that was just what they did.
Right.
But it was maybe, it was the best worst moment of the entire episode. I can't make them the least valuable players for that though. I mean, I'm going to go with Matt just because like, does anyone, we've talked about him. I just said his name.
Yeah.
Do you remember he was in the episode?
Right. It was probably so long ago that we talked about him, like almost an hour.
His screen time was 5 minutes and that's generous. Maybe two.
Yeah. Jessica.
I'm going to go with poor Allison because she didn't really have anything to do this week. And the stuff she did have to do was kind of like tragic because A, why are you even still talking to stupid Billy? Like your ex, why are you still living in this building? Allison, you have to move. Get out of this building. This is bad for you. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you like even getting involved in this relationship at all? It is a terrible idea. She decide she's going to help out poor Brooke with like whatever dumb copywriting problem Brooke has. Why are you doing that? You're such a martyr. But she also doesn't really have anything to do other than just sort of like wander in a room and be like, oh, I guess I'll help you. And then like get rebuffed. It was tragic for her. Poor Allison.
Mine relatedly is Andrew Hsu continuing to just suck ass in this whole heel turn. And I know it's only going to get worse, but like the number of times I've had to like capture a smirk of his in a completely inappropriate moment. It's like, fix your face, bitch. This is not the way.
Oh, but at least he could never realistically be a hero because he's so awful.
He
like, heel turn is the only thing they can really do with him.
Yeah.
And even that, he kind of bungles.
Yeah, and I realize I probably should have been picking actors for that, but you guys know what I mean when I use my character names. But like, I was thinking about this when I was watching that not to like plagiarize myself, but I remember writing in my recap for the wig episode that Andrew Hsu acts with his teeth.
Yes.
And it's true. He like sucks on that, sticks in that sometimes, or like sucks on him. And like, that's all he does is he's always fiddling with like his dental situation. That's all he can do. He's not good.
No, he's not.
I'm sorry,
he's
Andrew Hsu. You're so cute. And you quit acting. So like, maybe you also like agree with us.
Yeah. There's one thing we can say in his defense.
He quit acting.
Next time on Again With This. It's a 2-hour barn burner of an episode. Alan might get outed. Richard and Joe are still something something business Jane. An extremely unlikely plot twist pushes Michael and Kimberly back together. Bobby's facing attacks on his cable business. Oh no. And someone dies. Someone we haven't mentioned yet. Probably. For more on this podcast, including show notes and links to our visual aids, go to our website, againwiththis90210.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm Tara Ariano. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TaraArianO. My absent co-host, Sarah D. Bunting, first in our hearts, is on Twitter at Tomato Nation. Our producers on Instagram at David T. Cole. Heather and Jessica, where can our listeners find you and your work?
You can find some of our work at your favorite indie bookstore or any other bookstore that you love. We wrote books called The Royal We and The Air Affair. Woo! They are related.
They're wonderful.
Yes. And our other work can be found on our website where we talk about dumb celebrity outfits. It's called Go Fug Yourself. That's F-U-G. It has a G. .com. And then we're on Twitter and Instagram at Fug Girls, F-U-G-G-I-R-L-S.
Thank you so, so much for filling in. We loved talking
with
you. And we will see everyone right here next time.
Go home, you condescending bitch, and we'll let you know what we think.